Okay. Smorgasbord.
I don't even know. Yeah.
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. Smorgasbord. Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord.
I don't know.
Smorgasbord.
A smorgasbord of video game goodness. Sweeney has his apple and bites it too. Halo Infinite Season 2 can't land the skill jump. And Activision blames World War II for Vanguard's poor reception. Stick around, folks. Time to light up another campfire. Alright, kiddies, welcome to the Smorgasbord. Hello and welcome to the Campfire Gaming Podcast. My name is Matt and I will be your host tonight. As you can tell, hopefully by the intro, we like saying the word smorgasbord. We're probably also saying it wrong. But anyways, joining me tonight is the one, the only, Rich. How we doing, Rich?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I'm ready to talk about this smorgasbord of information.
The smorgasbord.
Smorgasbord. God, it's a fun word. Anyways, but before we kick it off, some quick announcements here, or announcement, really. Be sure to check out our Halo series reviews, where we're our review of the Halo TV series that we've been dropping kind of as bonus episodes during the week. The last, what are we on? I think by the time you're listening to this, seven. Yeah, so we're about seven episodes in.
Seven deep. We're almost done, too.
Yeah, only two more episodes left. So be sure to check that out. We, well, I guess until the most recent episode, we're kind of having fun doing it. So hopefully the next couple episodes of the show kind of get better so we enjoy it a little bit more. Spoiler, it was a Quan episode.
It was a Quan episode. I'm sure a lot of our listeners probably won't know that unless they were actively watching the show, but you should be.
Yeah.
Or at least listening to us talk about it if you don't want to subscribe to Paramount Plus. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, it's probably not worth subscribing to Paramount Plus to watch.
Yeah, so, I don't think so.
Also, check out our website at campfiregamingpodcast.com where you can find links to our socials such as Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and a link to our Discord where we'd love to chat with you. We were just talking about the Halo TV show. We pretty much the day after start talking about it and kind of share our opinions with some of the other people on the Discord. And we also talk games throughout the week. So be sure to jump into our Discord. We like to have a lot of fun, chat about some cool stuff during the week between all this, the podcast and goodness that we put out. So,
and we play a lot of games together. Well, maybe not a lot of games. We play games together.
Not recently. We've both been very busy, but yes.
Yes. Typically, we play games together.
Yeah, typically. So we're at a busy point in our year for both of us. So I know we haven't been playing as much, but we do play games, especially our favorite. People are probably tired of us talking about it, but Hell Let Loose. So I still play that on the regular.
Yeah.
It's a good one. It's a good one. But let's kick it off with a kind of an update to the big news from last week. The Square Enix and Embracer Group acquisition that we chatted about. So weirdly enough, I thought we'd have a lot more to talk about this week after that big news drop, because when we talked about it, it literally had just happened like 12, maybe 24 hours earlier. So it was just kind of the initial shock we had and the crazy information that was flying around. So we really So we really only chatted, kind of the basics of it. And typically, especially with something like the Activision acquisition earlier in the year, a week later, we had so much more to talk about. But for me, it just feels like there wasn't a lot more information that came out about this. It really was kind of the bare bones that we talked about last week. But we did get a few little tidbits, especially if you were wondering what was going to happen with kind of the Crystal Dynamics and Eidos Montreal studios. The good news as far as Crystal Dynamics is they are going to continue to develop the new Tomb Raider that they announced. Actually, I think it was only a few weeks before the acquisition announcement. And that they did come out and say that both studios are also still working on how they, the CEO Lars Wingfors of Embracer Group said, very sizable AAA experiences in the pipeline. So could be a lot of good stuff. He could be referring to Tomb Raider for Crystal Dynamics, but they also developed multiple games at a time. Perfect Dark is one of those. They were assisting with Rise. Was it Rise of the third Tomb Raider? I think it was Rise of the Tomb Raider. They were working on assisting with that while also doing Marvel's Avengers. So, you know, the studio could be working on multiple projects.
I'm sure they are.
Yeah. And then Eidos Montreal, they just put out, I think they were the ones that did Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes.
So, yeah, so they've probably obviously got something in the works. So, hopefully some good
Guardians
stuff from there.
Of the Galaxy? Did you end up
not yet? It's everything I've heard of Guardians of the Galaxy so far is that it's really good. But it's like one of those like sleeper hits. Like everybody that's played it is like, this is a great game. Why aren't you playing it? But nobody, like, from a sales aspect, I think it was actually a disappointment to Square. Probably why they sold that studio. So I'd like to get around to trying it sometime. It looked interesting.
I mean, do you think people might be just kind of spurned from Avengers? That it might be like kind of a turnoff to get into Marvel games because it's just kind of like, it's, I don't know.
It could be. It could definitely be. You know, that thought did cross my mind, is maybe people were burned by the Avengers and that it was live service.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I've never really been huge into Marvel games. Like, you know, when the movies were kind of going through their big hype of, you know, like the 2010s, all those Marvel movies coming out. Yeah, I went and saw every single one of them because I thought it was just kind of a cool cinematic experience. But honestly, yeah, I've had like very little interest in actually playing any of like the Marvel games. Like, I think the last Marvel game I played was like one of the Ultimate Alliance games.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I don't know the last Marvel game.
I mean, maybe I'll have to check this one out. Wasn't this on Game Pass?
This one is on Game Pass.
It is on Game Pass. Okay, well then, oh yeah, I might check it out.
We'll have to see how long it is. Maybe if it's a pretty decently, you know, not terribly long, we'll have to
maybe be a good book club. Yeah. Might be a good book club.
We'll have to check that out. But like you, I haven't really played a lot of. I was looking forward to Avengers until I forget when they kind of started talking about it being a live service game, and then it was kind of a turnoff. And then it came out and kind of fell flat. You know, a previous host on the show, Chris, used to always talk about how it was like just the kind of story was good, but all the live service-y, you know, the grinding you have to
do. It just ruined it. Yeah.
That's where it kind of, you know, was not great. And Crystal Dynamics is, you know, a good company. I enjoyed all three of the Tomb Raider games. I think everybody should at least, at minimum, play the first two. I enjoyed the third one, but as weirdly as it sounds, I compare it to the Batman Arkham series where I love Asylum and City, and everybody should play that, but they kind of focused on a certain gameplay mechanic in Arkham Knight, which was the Batmobile, and in Rise of the Tomb Raider, they kind of focused too much on the kind of, collecting resources to upgrade stuff and points, you know, hiding in the rainforest. It was just kind of, it was still the experience that you're used to from the first two games, just not as good, but still two great series that everybody should play through. But not a great transition, but we are going to go back to Marvel's Avengers here. One little tidbit too that came out in the last week was kind of Marvel Avengers future. And maybe we're looking too much into this, but with the purchase, it did come out that, like, basically, now that Embracer owns the Marvel's Avengers, they're going to have to go through some sort of kind of approvals through Marvel to do any new content, which makes sense. I'm sure Square Enix kind of had to do some of that stuff as well. But for a game that has done relatively poorly and then now switching groups, it's going to be interesting to see if Embracer Group or Marvel or both of them are going to want to continue supporting this live service game into the future.
I mean, that's going to be I'm wondering if this is going to be a trend that a lot of companies are going to start questioning, especially some of the major releases that have gotten the live service treatment lately and have been kind of flopping because of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's I'm sure, like, that's the thing, right? Is that the live service model does appeal to a lot of companies because it makes an ass load of money. And kind of having that free-to-play mobile model is what, you know, is going to rake in the Benjamins, and it's what's going to keep people, you know, paying well after they have either more than they would have for, like, say, if it was just $60 and kind of a packaged experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to watch. Obviously, there's already been a few games that came out as these live service games that died. The most memorable was a fan favorite of ours, not necessarily to play, but to shit on, was Anthem. So,
right.
You know, but yeah, no, it's going to be interesting to see if this kind of live service fad continues, obviously, with the Sony acquiring Bungie and all that, and their kind of commitment to creating live service games. At least Sony's going to continue to do it. And obviously other studios are going to do it as well, but hopefully they at least look and learn from these other failed or ones that aren't doing so good. And they learn, they take from those games, the good stuff, and fix all any sort of bad stuff or bad process or whatever to actually, if they are going to make a live service game, do it right, do it fun. Cause I don't think live service games are inherently bad. It's just like we like to shit on with like the NFTs and the blockchain stuff, is everybody just jumped on it and then nobody did it right and nobody's supporting it. 343, we're looking at you. you know, and it's just, yeah, but it'll be something to watch.
Savage, yeah. I mean, okay, that's not savage, they kind of asked for that.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm only telling the truth, you know, or like what's happening.
We could just look at what's been going on with season two, right? I mean, that's kind of like the, I don't know what they were banking on for. I don't know. Yeah, it's what they were hyping up, and that's why we had, you know, like 6 months of content drought, even in a live service game. I mean, how many patches did we have in that little chart on that was passed around on Reddit? It was just like a couple of days that we actually got updates, and it were very, very tiny updates.
I feel there's two, maybe three updates for each month since I'm gonna call it a launch in November, at least multiplayer launch. That was not a beta or whatever they called it. You know, that was the launch of the multiplayer in November. But it was only like two, maybe three updates a month, but and patches to fix things or try to fix things, like BTB there for what was dead for a month. I don't know.
Yeah, it was something like that.
But yeah, so I mean, we're talking about Halo. I hopped in, I think I played about 3 minutes of it, only to check because they said they fixed the Warthog and that it's more weighty, like there's more weight to it. Anybody that played the campaign, and I'm sure multiplayer as well, like, what was my joke on Discord? You know, I was driving by a grunt and it sneezed, and my Warthog just, you know, started rolling over, right?
Right.
But, I mean, the physics and the weight of the Warthog were really bad in campaign, I'm assuming multiplayer. So, for me, I jumped in. I drove around the world for a couple minutes. I did notice that they broke speed lines or whatever. Yeah, the speed lines. I hate those things. They turn it off. Now I can't turn them off at all. Used to have to every session hop in and turn it off and on, or on and off. Yeah. And then they'd go away. Now they don't go away at all. So that was my experience with season two. I haven't touched it since. How has your experience been so far with season two?
Oh, dude, it's been funny because I've already uninstalled the game.
I technically did too, but my uninstalling is moving it to my external hard drive, so I don't have to download 60 gigs again if it ever gets better.
Like, so I wasn't banking so much on there being new content for this patch. What I was really, really hoping is that there was going to be a lot of underlying technical issues that were going to be fixed. I was really, really hoping to see more in the lines of like desync issues being fixed, network latency, matchmaking problems. Like I think I've complained enough about, you know, the goofy matchmaking, like how the matchmaking will take your MMR and then kind of use that as a basis for who you're getting matched up against in ranked. matchmaking, yep. and then effectively almost making the CSR kind of worthless, because it's kind of like wherever you really just get stuck at in CSR, the game is going to put you at a, you know, the MMR is going to fix you at a 50-50 win loss. It's just going to try and put you in a 50-50 win loss. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't get put into a 50-50 win loss, you're if your MMR is so inflated, you can get to a point where all of your wins are going to be worth like 1-2 point CSR gain, and then the second you lose, you're going to lose 15-20 points, you know,
yeah.
thereby nullifying like 10 games worth of stuff, you know, 10 games worth of progress or something. Mm-hmm. And that was what got me to quit the first time, was because I just like, it felt like such a grind, and I made a giant, you know, I had a giant bitch fit about it in Discord, where I was showing screenshots of my Halo stat tracker or whatever, showing that like I had like a 74% win rate or something like that. That's mm-hmm. I think that's about what it was. And even with a 74% win rate, I still ended up at a net zero CSR. Like,
yeah.
And like all of those, like those little amount of losses were enough to cancel out all of my wins for that, yep. that 74% win rate. So yeah. that really made me upset. So yeah, I mean, I was going into this hoping with a little bit of hopium, thinking, well, if they fix some of the technical problems and, you know, they address some of the matchmaking issues, I'm fine continuing to play this game, even if it is a little raw on content. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fine. Like I can keep myself busy. I don't play the game enough. I don't play, like, I may play a lot of ranked, but I'm not like super sweaty where I'm going to be, you know, playing this, you know, day in and day out kind of a thing. But they didn't, you know, they didn't do that. And in fact, mm-hmm. they not only did they not really address it, they effectively made it worse. So, I mean, going into why a big reason why a lot of the people are complaining about season two so far is that they stealth nerfed a lot of stuff. So, yep. I think they mentioned that they were going to be taking out a couple of things for some of the like the glitches and things like that from the campaign. I think that was, I want to say that
about that.
A little bit of that was announced before they released the patch. But there was a lot of other things that they ended up changing that a lot of people weren't expecting them to change. And given that a lot of those, I mean, like, I don't think a lot of those bugs and glitches and all that were game breaking necessarily, at least for the campaign. But it just kind of made it a little bit more fun. Like being able to fly a pelican around was kind of cool. You know?
Yeah.
Or I think the handheld scorpion gun was kind of, it's silly.
Yeah.
But the stuff like that, that's kind of fun, right?
Well, they definitely, I don't know the extent of the one other, they've, with both the multiplayer side of the things they took out in single or campaign side of things that, I guess it is single player, right? They don't have co-op yet. Oh, burn. But like some of the things that they've taken out is things that like just don't make sense, right? You know, like we said, the scorpion cannon, that's optional. Who cares if people are using that to run through the campaign faster, right? You know, right. I never went out of my way to find it. I should have, because it sounds fun. But you know,
it does sound cool.
If the creative community wants to like come up with as fast a video as they can running with the scorpion, but there's still going to be people that are going to still try to run through it fast, but with no scorpion, right? You know, mm-hmm. scorpion cannon, you know, and what was it? They took out the pelican. Yeah, that just sounded like fun. Unless that was game breaking, I don't know why they got rid of it. The other one was they kind of ruined speedrunner stuff with, I think it's when you're taking out the three banished AA guns. I think there was something where you could like respawn and it would put you in a better spot to get faster, I think, to the different AA guns. And they wrecked that too. So to me, all these things are like, they're just fun additions, assuming they're not breaking the game. If there is something that causes crashes or whatever, right? I understand them fixing it. But from the sounds of it, it was just, you know, Scorpion Cannon was there just for people to have fun and do some cool run throughs on like Lasso. You know, the speed running with the AA gun checkpoint or whatever it was. It just seems silly. And with the multiplayer side of things, they took out, what was it, 7 or 8 different skill jumps, I think is what they call it in the hardcore community.
Yep.
Which, again, makes no sense unless it's breaking the game or providing an unfair advantage. So it was just kind
of... Well, that's... I mean, and that was kind of the thing that they were trying to address. So I think there was like 1 or 2, I think, that did cause an unfair advantage on some of the maps where, yes, you could use the skill jump to get, I think, to a power weapon. Or I don't remember what the exact... I don't do the skill jumps. I don't really.
Yeah.
I didn't care enough to really go and practice those. Like I said, I'm not that hardcore. I just play because I really like the ranked game modes. I like the BR starts. That's just that's how I've always really liked playing Halo.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that there are a bunch that weren't, you know, advantageous like that off the start. And then once spawns start kind of really rotating around and things like that, then it's more in the lines of just it doesn't really make any difference where the thing is. So, OK, fine. You know, like if you remove that one skill jump because it gives an unfair advantage, I can respect that. Like that mm-hmm. makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But then they go and they remove like all of them. You know, they remove a whole bunch of them. And I know that a lot of content creators were kind of pissed about that because it's one of those things that's like, you know, they spent time making videos, teaching people, practicing it themselves so that they could make the videos to teach people how to do stuff like this. And it was just kind of null and voided. Now, I think 343 is actually planning to walk back a lot of that. At least that's the vibe that I got from some of their tweets. And some mm-hmm. of the messages that they put on, I think, on Reddit is that they are trying to, they are looking into it. I've grown so sick of that. Like, I've grown so sick of them saying, we're listening to your feedback. We're looking into it. We're going to check the data and see what the data says. It's like, man, just do something with the game. Like, and that's, we're not even covering the big issue that I actually had that made me uninstall the game. The thing that really made me want to quit playing flat out was the stupid gun jamming bug that mm-hmm. aggravated me because I'm sitting there trying to play it. Like, you know, like I said, what little content that there already was. Yes, there was. They did add a new map for the competitive. Sweet. I'm happy about it. Whatever. That's great. But if the guns aren't functioning properly, what the hell is the point in playing this game anymore? If that's like the one big thing that everybody gave this game praise for was the gameplay. The gunplay felt good. Now you've made the game and the gunplay not feel good. And they gave the same tired, the same BS is that they're looking into it. They're looking into fixing it.
Yeah,
I feel like this should have been an emergency fix to get this out. You need to hot fix this ASAP. Like, we work in software. We know that if there's something that is that critical,
mm-hmm.
it needs to get fixed like now. Like, you need to push this out. This can't wait for like a 2-week release cycle. You got to push this out ASAP. It's mm-hmm. absolutely ridiculous that they are like, as far as I know, the bug is still in the game today. Yeah. It's still in the game as of recording today.
I haven't heard anything about it being fixed, but yeah. I mean, to your point, like you're saying, like the core, even me, who I have a lot of criticisms for the game, is like the core shooting, you know, John McShooty face stuff is still there. It's fun, right? Even the grapple hook was fun in the campaign, which I still think was a crutch because the rest of the campaign in the open world was pretty weak. You know, but it's just like I came to this realization this week. It was weird. I very much dislike Halo 5, and I think it's not as great of a game as Infinite. That's not saying much because I don't think Infinite is that much better. But the fact that Halo Infinite has better core gameplay, and the gameplay, the kind of original 30 seconds of fun is there. I came to this weird realization that I actually put Halo Infinite down faster than I did Halo 5, which is kind of sad
for
a game that I think its core is better than Halo 4 and Halo 5 as far as the gameplay and how it feels.
Yeah, it's just Sorry.
No, that's it. Go ahead.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off. This is the kind of thing that I get all like angry and passionate about because it's like I wanted Infinite to be good so bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know that we dumped on it and we were all skeptical, but I mean we were skeptical for good reason, right? Like it wasn't that we were just trying to shit on it just to be like, you know, like screw 343, we want them to fail. Like we didn't want 343 to fail. We want them to succeed. But the thing was is that we've been burned so many goddamn times with this franchise that it's like, what hope do we have left to give you? Like,
I think in general,
every single iteration, like every single Halo iteration, every single product that you've released at like to some level has been a disaster. Mm-hmm. Halo 4 multiplayer was a disaster, nearly killed the competitive community for Halo. Halo Master Chief Collection, thought to be a great revival for the competitive community because we had Halo 2 anniversary and people were getting back into the Halo 2 roots. And then it was an absolute disaster of a launch where half the shit didn't even work. Then you get to Halo 5 and again, like the multiplayer worked just fine, but the campaign was absolutely trash. There was no Forge, no co-op, no nothing. Like, it was like, what the fuck, 343? Like, come on. If you're really going to try and take care of this franchise, you need to actually bust some ass to get some of this stuff out. And it's so sad because like Halo 5, they talked about how doing that sort of, you know, monthly release cycle, getting all that content out there, burned them out. And they wanted to revert on that. I get it. I 100% agree that something like that is not sustainable if you're really trying to keep pumping out content like that. Mm-hmm. But Jesus Christ, like fix the game. Like just fix it. There is a lot of technical issues here that need to be addressed. I need these to be addressed for me to actually want to play the game anymore. And at this point, I'm going to give it the MCC treatment. I'm going to put it away and wait 3 years and check in and see, you know, might check up on Halo Waypoint once in a while and see if it's gotten any better. Check Reddit. As the fire's gone out? Nope. All right. Well, we put it again on the shelf for another couple of years until people unanimously say, oh, this is actually pretty good. That's what you'll like. Anybody who talks about MCC now on Reddit is usually pretty positive about it. There's not a lot of complaints about MCC because it's actually good now.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, everybody loves MCC now. And I'm actually seeing a lot more of that drift into. I love going to the salt mines of our Reddit or our Halo. Yeah. I know it's not, it's just an echo chamber of salt, but it's still fun to go there. But, yeah, everybody on there, like, if it's anything Infinite related, it's usually some complaint. And then MCC, it's, hey, you know, this is something cool. The custom game browser that came out, people are loving that, right? It's just, yeah. But to your point, yeah, it's very early. I want to say almost probably since the day the beta launched. I told you this on a previous podcast, too. I think I played a game or two and didn't touch it for, trying to think, probably 6 weeks. You guys are all like, so good. Why aren't you playing? It's like, challenge system sucks. I'm not dealing with that shit.
Yeah. And then
I'm going to go play something else that respects me and my time. Yeah.
That is, again, the crux of a really big problem for a lot of people for this season two is that this challenge system, it blows. Like, there's no sugarcoating it. It blows. And it's not fun. And it is killing people's desire to play Halo, and that makes me again even more sad because this was the opportunity, like making Halo a live service, I think could have been a really good idea. It's keeping up with things like Apex Legends, like Fortnite, mm-hmm. and all that. You have a free-to-play game, you make it as accessible as humanly possible, reduce the barrier to entry to nothing, and you let people do what they want with the game. That's the greatest part about Halo, is that it is so customizable. You can tailor all these experiences to what you want to play, whether it be competitive or you want to get crazy with the creative side and do like Forge stuff, or you want to do speed runs, or you want to do anything. It's just, if it's just to sit down, drink, you know, grab some beers and slay your friends, that's great. That's what it's supposed to be. That is what Halo is supposed to be. And it is doing everything that it can to ruin that experience for everybody for some bullshit challenge system. It's just like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Nah. Yeah, I'm putting it down for until the internet tells me it's good. And then I'll still be skeptical about it and then probably return and give it a try. It's and to your point, and we've said this before, no Forge, no co-op, no custom game browser. We said it before it launched. That's what we were worried about, and that was going to hurt the game. And surprise.
It did, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, like, I'm sure they wanted to do something really cool with the Forge. You know, like, they talked about a lot of the really kick-ass features that they're wanting to put in, like, you know, like a script, like scripting and things like that. And you know what? That's awesome. I would love to see that, you know?
Yep. And some of the stuff that's been leaked from Forge sounds pretty cool. So we'll get a beta September, I think it was, if I remember the roadmap. But
But I mean, it. I feel like, yeah, with how low the barrier to entry was for Halo Infinite, it could have been something as successful as, say, Apex or Fortnite. If it got the same love that those games got, you know, that the amount of effort that those companies put behind those games to maintain them, yeah, Halo would be a rock solid game right now, and it would be just absolutely phenomenal. But I feel like there's so many bureaucratic decisions and, you know, misplacement of priorities and maybe misguided management or something like that. And the fact that they probably don't have any staff left after they got rid of all the contractors, you know.
It's a ghost town over there.
Yeah, supposedly. Probably. Or I don't, maybe.
But, So
imagine if Bonnie Ross fought for Halo as hard as, you know, Sweeney fights for Fortnite, right?
Yeah.
Like, if she actually championed, like, where she was ready to go to court over, you know, Halo getting removed off of iOS or something like that. And then they found a way, right? They found a way.
Yeah, not a fork fight fan, and I only have an Apple phone for work, but the big news for Epic Games this week is you can now play Fork Fight on on Android, but on your iPhone, right, your iPads, all that stuff. Xbox Cloud Gaming. I actually saw some complaints about that one, but we chatted about this, I want to say 5-6 months ago, where when a lot of this was kind of dying down and Apple was like, you know, still had Fork Fight off the, you know, the store. We were like, oh yeah, they're probably just going to create some sort of like web app, similar to how Netflix kind of gets around all the Apple bullshit. And it's like, you know, it's basically what they did here between Xbox Game Cloud. You can basically log into the browser and play Fork Fight that way now on whatever device. Again, the exciting news here for Apple users is the iOS and iPad again. So, yeah, you can jump on in and play Fork Fight again. Yay.
Hey, but like I said, I mean, Sweeney went to war with Apple for that. I mean, granted, mm-hmm. Fortnite makes them a lot of money.
Yeah. No, and I think it's good.
And I would too, right? Like, if you wanted to go to war for a franchise, that would be the one to go to war for.
but yeah, no, I mean, it's good news for Epic. And I think in general, because hopefully we discussed this when all that Microsoft or Epic versus Apple stuff was going on, is, you know, Apple does need to kind of loosen up a little bit. And I think when you start finding workarounds like this, at some point, hopefully they will do that. But,
and I mean, it's kind of, I mean, Xbox is clearly willing to play ball on that one, because that one's kind of like a stick it to them kind of a thing too, you know.
They were, if you remember, they were kind of on Epic's side too. I don't think as crazy as Tim Sweeney was pushing it, but yeah, good stuff. I did want to point out, Tim Sweeney did tweet about the news here, but one little thing he had in one of his tweets was, quote, "No subscription required, no 30% Apple tax." So he's definitely taken a
way
stab
to go. At Apple. You, he found a way.
Mm-hmm. But I guess just because we were talking about it, just real quick before we move on from Halo and Fork Fight, now's a good time to mention our Discord again, or our Twitter. Hop on and let us know your thoughts on 343's love letter to Halo fans or Infinite. You know, let us know your thoughts on it. We'd love to hear what you guys think. So please tweet at us or join the Discord and tell us if you enjoyed that love letter or not.
Yeah, it's just a letter. It's just a little letter on like a postcard that just says, "Dear Halo fans, fuck you, 343."
It's a fist bump. It's an eviction letter. Stop, you know, stop being a fan.
Yeah, get out of here. You're done. Your rent has been paid.
So we touched on this a little bit last week with all the crazy acquisition news. Honestly, I'm getting, you know, this is news and it's worth talking about, but man, I'm over this acquisition stuff.
Oh man, this is getting crazy.
Because there's stuff every week. But we mentioned last week about how Ubisoft is apparently potentially being shopped around. This week we found out, yep. I'm going to butcher it, I apologize, the Guillemot family?
I don't know. Guillermo?
Yeah. They own 50. Know. They own almost 16% of the company. I should have looked up his name. I butchered this last week. The CEO is the head of the family that's running Ubisoft over there. Well, they're not big fans of this potential acquisition. So it sounds like they're working with a private equity firm to basically take control so that the company can't be acquired. Right. And I don't know if we were podcasting at the time. If we were, I don't even remember the details, but I know there was I'm going to air quotes hostile takeover that was tried years back as well, that the Guillermo, I'm thinking Guillermo from What We Do in the Shadows. So anyways, I apologize. I don't mean to butcher your name, but yeah, apparently that family kind of held off that hostile takeover. So it's in a way, I think, good to see them fight for it. Again, I'm iffy on Ubisoft games anymore just because they're copy and paste methods. But, I've definitely enjoyed plenty of their games in the past. And I'm pretty sure a lot of that has to do with the Guillermo family running it. So yeah, I'm sure we'll have more news of this in the future at some point.
Yep. Oh, dude, it's like we said, it's time to buy up all the Monopoly properties and everyone's doing it.
We should find a studio that's cheap enough that we can buy. So we
let's buy the Campfire something. Gaming Studio.
Campfire Gaming Podcast Gaming Studio.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sounds good. Sounds good. I like
Game
it.
Game Developers like Studio. Perfect. Well, you heard it here first. We're acquiring that studio. We don't know much about them. Hopefully they're cool people over there.
They're the best.
They're the best. So Activision is blaming poor sales of Vanguard on an 80-year-old war, World War II. Apparently they're like, screw you, World War II. Basically, in their financial statements or what is it, their earnings calls and stuff like that, they attributed really more the topic that Vanguard was based on, World War II, and that caused poor sales of the game. Which I know we were kind of, I think we talked before it came out, a couple things, another point we'll get in here in a second, but Call of Duty, I used to play a bunch of the games up until I think Modern Warfare, and then I kind of fell off because I got a little crazy. But a lot of the World War II games were really fun, and I do enjoy playing World War II games. But Call of Duty definitely beat that kind of topic, that era into the ground. So it was a little bit of a surprise to see them going back to it.
Yeah,
it's not a big surprise that the sales were not great.
They were a big reason why the World War II, shooter genre kind of got tired so quickly is because they released so many of them.
Yep. Yeah, every year, like a new World War II game.
Yeah.
But I did want to mention that I also don't think World War II is a reason to blame poor sales.
Oh,
because
no. Yeah.
You just need to make a good game.
Oh my God, I'm already forgetting the studio.
Black Matter,
thank you. And that's what they did with Hell Let Loose.
Yeah, you just need to make something fun in that era, and
well,
people will play it.
They made it fun, and they made it different, right? Like, you're just replaying, iconic battle scenarios, but it the atmosphere kind of makes itself, and it's all player generated. That's what makes it so cool. Is that you are walking around, and then the snap of a bullet comes over you, and then a firefight breaks out, and then all of a sudden, all hell let loose.
Yeah, no, they definitely kind of built an experience around that era as far as equipment and gameplay, and they crafted this unique experience where, again, all the Call of Duty bros can at me, but I imagine a lot of people aren't super big fans of playing a Twitch shooter, with bolt action rifles, right? Pop off a shot here, right? Because they are, I assume, I haven't played Vanguard, But I assume they're going to try to stay era accurate in that, yeah, there were machine guns, but a majority of the war was fought with bolt actions or, you know, some semi-automatic, you know, rifles, not automatic rifles like you are in the modern day stuff where you can just
and they didn't
spray
have, you
bullets
know, like,
everywhere.
Yeah, they didn't have like red dot sights and shit like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. I also had to laugh a little bit because we talked about this last fall as well, where there was a whole big article about how this the Call of Duty studio wanted to make these, and I think they compared it to Master Chief, these iconic characters. Because from what I remember of Vanguard, I think there was like kind of four main characters of like a special, or for World War II era, like a special ops group. And they wanted to make of these super likable and recognizable characters. And I was like, well, as you could tell, clearly they aren't super liked and memorable because I don't remember them, you know, and the game didn't do very well. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they try to continue on with these characters, because I think that was their plan. They wanted to do games and games with them because it fans were supposed to like them. And
yeah. They tried to ham fist in a whole bunch of characters that nobody has heard of or cared about, and it didn't pay off.
Nope.
They tried to sell it. They really tried to sell it.
Yeah. But as far as more Call of Duty news, it hasn't been shown or anything, but as we know from leaks, and they officially announced it, I think, a week or so ago on Twitter, Modern Warfare 2 is the next Call of Duty game coming this fall, along with apparently a pretty big revamp to Warzone. Again, no details other than what I just said. But the crazy thing, I guess it's not too crazy for Activision, honestly. I guess we'd have to see what previous Call of Duties were like. But there's reportedly over 3,000 people, so almost a third of Activision Blizzard is working on Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Again, this isn't unheard of because, you know, the studios, there was always those support Call of Duty studios, right, that would help on whatever game is coming out that year. But it would be really nice. It would be really cool to see a comparison of previous years, roughly how many people worked on a Call of Duty game. But having a 30-year company work on one game, you know, as a publisher that is owns multiple studios and works on tons of different titles is insane. It's crazy.
That is a lot. Yeah. It's a lot of Call of Duty too. We're getting a lot of Call of Duty.
Hopefully everybody likes it.
To be fair, the Modern Warfare, the one that came out 2 years ago, actually not bad. I actually did like it. I thought the campaign was a little weird at times, and of course it's always, you know, it's just a guardrail of set piece to set piece.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it was pretty fun. I did enjoy it, and then the multiplayer I thought was pretty good. I thought that it was really funny that, you know, Modern Warfare was trying to capture the Battlefield essence when they brought in like that I don't remember what the big war mode was called, but All Out War or something like that. I don't remember. Yeah. And that was fun. I liked that.
Yeah. You want to know a fun Call of Duty fact?
Give it to me.
Until about 3 weeks ago, I forget where I stopped. I think Blops 2. I think I played every Call of Duty up to Blops 2. I had never purchased a Call of Duty game, even though I played a good bit of them. Probably about half now since they release one every year, and it's been a few years since Blops 2. But I bought my first Call of Duty game about 3 weeks ago.
Did you really?
Yeah, I got was it Blops 3? Because some friends said zombies were fun and they wanted to play zombies.
There you go.
And we played it all of 3 hours, I think. So,
Do you feel like your purchase was worth it?
No, because we switched over to better zombie games like Zombie Army 4 and whatever. Go ahead and at me. Flood Firefight in MCC.
Oh, there you go. No, I heard zombies. That was fun.
Yeah.
I thought that was fun. I heard that was fun. I hadn't played it yet.
It's 3 hours went by real quick, and it was a blast.
Playing Flood Firefight?
Yeah. Oh, got so many waves in, and then like I looked at the clock, and I'm like, oh God, we've been doing this for like 2 hours, and then we still played for like another hour before the flood finally were kicking our ass, and we died. So yeah, good times. But Sony is, I believe it's June, going to be revamping their tiers for PlayStation Plus. We chatted about that in a previous episode. Definitely go check it out. There's a lot of really kind of neat things, especially if you're in the PlayStation ecosystem and you enjoy playing a lot of their games. But some new good news, I think that's essentially going to be coming to that service over the next year or two, is they announced they created a game preservation team. If you remember game from
preservation team.
Yeah, if you remember from when we went through the different tiers of the new PlayStation Plus subscription model, there was a lot of kind of like ways to play, as you'd expect, PlayStation 1, 2, 3, 4 games, right? Mm-hmm. It sounds like this team will focus on preserving PlayStation IPs. Surprise. Which is funny because this is also very similar to, I forget what Microsoft calls it, but they kind of have their own team that does this. This is how we got backwards compatibility and all that good stuff, and we're able to play Xbox games from 20 years ago. So I think this is good news. I guess depending on how it pans out and how, you know, what that team does. But for a company and publisher that has so many great games, I think this is fantastic news and will hopefully only pay off for PlayStation Plus subscribers in the future.
Yeah, I know that Blizzard does this too. They have a whole game dedicated to classic games. It is nicely called the Classic Games Team.
Yeah.
And they're the ones who do stuff like the, like I know that they did the StarCraft remaster, which was actually really nice. I think they were the ones also behind the, the Diablo 2 Resurrected, which also turned out very, very well.
Now, yes,
I don't know if they did if they did the Warcraft 3 Reforged, but that was just a disaster from the sound from start to finish, is what it sounded like.
If I remember correctly, it's technically the same team, yes, the classic team or whatever they were called, right? But yeah. I think that they were technically different teams that worked on the Warcraft 3 and the Diablo 2 remake, because didn't they bring in the team that worked on Warcraft 3 did a really bad job, right? It was not great. And then they brought in, was it Vicarious Visions? They essentially made them like the classic team, because they're the ones that they finished up Diablo 2.
They're
the classic team now, right?
Right. It's like they got absorbed into the classic games team.
Yeah.
Is what it sounded like. But yes, Vicarious Visions, I forgot. Yeah, they're the ones who did most of the work on Diablo 2.
But they're technically the classic team.
But it got handed off to them.
Yeah.
But yes, I do believe that that's what they are now. Yeah. But they weren't the ones who did the StarCraft remaster. That was kind of like before Vicarious Visions came into it. They were the ones who did the StarCraft remaster.
Yep. So we have some kind of good news, hopefully, with this game preservation team, and potentially not so good news. Again, it would I feel benefit PlayStation Plus subscribers is it sounds like Sony is going to start forcing studios and developers and publishers to have, it looks like, about 2 hour long demos, you know, for their games, for, you know, people to be able to play before purchasing. Now there are, it sounds like, some kind of little rules around it, right? It has to be wholesale cost of $34 or more. So it's not like some little $5 indie game studio is going to have to spend, you know, a ton of their budget, you know, if they even have a budget on creating a demo or something like that. But I personally, like, as much as I think a studio that's able to develop time to create a demo or build out what I'm assuming will be kind of the easy way out for a lot of people, if this becomes a requirement, is like a time demo, like we'll just set up a timer and you can't play longer than 2 hours type thing. But to me, this it's probably a lot easier, but demos traditionally take away dev time from the team. A lot of times
do they?
I don't know if this is the same as old days, but almost create like a smaller team within the studio that would work on a demo.
Sure. I mean, that makes sense.
So to me, I don't, if it's studio, publisher, whatever wants to do this, I think it's totally fine. But to make them do it, I don't think it's a great idea or good look for Sony. What are your thoughts?
Now, So for this, I can't remember. It's not just that it's a 2-hour window. It's that it's the full game locked to 2 hours, right? A one-time use, kind of like the Resident Evil stuff, isn't it?
I think it's going to be kind of a... see here. Developers have up to 3 months after launch to put out a timed trial. I don't know if they said specifically it had to be a time trial or if it's just a needs at least a 2-hour long demo. Again, I imagine most studios are going to do something like that, like just download the whole game and you can play 2 hours from the start, right? Yeah. You know, good luck, because didn't Resident Evil Village kind of did something like that, but theirs was an hour long. You know, get something as far like as you that. Want in an yeah. hour, you know, start a game, have fun, good luck. I know Hell Let Loose did it. They did a 10-hour one, though. For the console before that launched, they did a 10-hour trial for it. Or was it within the first couple weeks of it? I'm trying to remember. Because that's how I played it for like about 10 minutes. I downloaded the trial and...
Oh, I don't know. Well, I mean, I don't know. It kind of depends because like I know that... You know, what you can do is you can also buy things on Steam. And then if you play under 2 hours or something like that of the game, then you can just refund it fully.
Yeah.
There's a couple of criteria that you could hit with that. But I don't remember ever playing the demo for Hell Let Loose because I bought in on early access. So,
yeah. Again, this was also console too. So I guess I don't know if they had one for Steam, but
probably not because it was in early access.
Mm hmm.
No point in making a demo for an early access title. Yeah. It kind of is the living demo.
But yeah, I'm curious to see how this plays out. I think it could potentially be, again, I imagine most studios and publishers are going to go the route of just put a timer on, download the whole game and just lock it to 2 hours or something like that. But
yeah,
if they kind of start forcing, you know, developers to kind of, you have to create like a demo, I just, you're taking resources away from finishing or building the game or polishing this or something like that, which, you know, I don't know. I guess we'll have to see how it pans out, but I don't know if forcing, you know, companies to do this is a great idea.
But. Well, I mean, I don't think forcing companies to do a lot of stuff that they don't want to do in general is a very good idea. Also, I think that it's kind of funny if they start making demos and there ends up becoming like security problems with those demos where like the full game gets leaked because they just basically take off the timer on the demo. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, that'll be fun in and of itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just seems like it's kind of a waste.
Nope. Yeah. I don't know. Again, if a studio publisher wants to do this, sure, go ahead. It's a great way to, you know, advertise your game, but I think it could be not great for a lot of other games, but we'll see. Again, I think the key here is the wholesale cost of $35 or higher. We can assume that if you're spending probably full price or around, I don't know what that would cost retail, but that you would, you know, it's going to be a pretty sizable game, which yes. Again, which is why it's good to have this, because anything cheaper than that could be a short experience where, oh, what if you're able to, was Stanley Parable or whatever? We played in like 2 hours or, yeah. Beginner's guide, right? So like what if
The beginner's guide was like an hour and a half. It was like 90 minutes or something like that.
Yeah. So a time trial for that would be a bad idea, right? You know. Especially if they're capping it at 2 hours. But yeah. So we'll see what happens. I'm excited to see how all this PlayStation Plus tier stuff works out next month. But so as we mentioned last week, Xbox has their Xbox and Bethesda event coming up here early next month. And there's kind of some rumors floating around that they're going to have a big push for what they're calling, I think, Xbox Everywhere Initiative. Yeah. And this is kind of, it seems to be a repeating thing this episode of things we've talked about before. A lot of the big rumor is we're probably going to get like an official launch of the Xbox Cloud Gaming. There's ideas or thoughts that we're going to get the TV apps that allow you to do Game Pass and cloud streaming, of getting the like TV stick or whatever, USB or HDMI stick that you plug in You can stream games that way.
If they get Xbox Game Pass or the Xbox app onto Linux, I'm gonna shit myself.
Yeah.
That is what I'm hoping for, to shit myself. No, it's to, I'm hoping that we get by Xbox everywhere, that they include like Linux PCs and things like that too, because it would make me and my Steam Deck very, very happy right now. I mean, I can play some of the games that are on Xbox, but I have to like buy it through Steam, and mm-hmm. I have to tweak it a bit, and I have to like not use some anti-cheats, which means I have limited online playability or something like that. So it would be really, really, really nice if they started supporting like the Game Pass app or something like that on Linux. And so that mm-hmm. I can actually, like, if I can play Game Pass on Linux and on my Steam Deck, then I'd say that, like, the Steam Deck is like the best thing I've ever bought.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm getting like just that much closer to ditching Windows and playing all my gaming on Linux.
Nice. No, yeah. I mean, again, it sounds like they're going to be doing some big push as far as the cloud gaming and Game Pass next month. That, you know, it could be where they also announced this rumored Game Pass family plan. But yeah, so I'm guessing that's going to be the theme of the show as far as coming out of Xbox and stuff. The hardware, the company side of Xbox is a big push for cloud gaming and Game Pass and all the new ways where you can Xbox everywhere.
Woo.
Ooh. Exciting news, but good times. Well, that's kind of our big stories for our smorgasbord episode.
That's our most of the topics. Smorgasbord. Yeah,
but we do have a little bit of dessert here. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time remake has been moved. It will be developed now development will be led by Ubisoft Montreal. So Ubisoft Pune and Mumbai will still support. So it sounds like, if you remember, this was announced like what I put here, September 2020 for release date, like a few months later. And then that got delayed, and then it kind of got delayed indefinitely. So and our early reactions from 2 years ago were not great on it. I love The Sands of Time. It was it's my first Prince of Persia game. And what they showed 2 years ago was not good. So hopefully this is only good news for that remake. And out of the ashes of E3 rise, well, we knew about Summer Game Fest. Summer Game Fest is starting Thursday, June 9th. That is Jeff Keighley's little summer game fun time that he does. And then IGN announced their Summer of Gaming, so that apparently they're going to have kind of a, it almost sounds a little bit like the Summer Game Fest. So they're two different things, I swear. Where they're going to have like things throughout the summer, where the big announcements and exclusives. So we're kind of drifting back to that. Instead of having a cool big gamer Christmas week with E3, we're spreading it out over June, July, and August, and
yeah,
probably cap it off with.
Yeah, summer is gaming season.
Yeah, gamer Christmas has now been extended from June to August.
Yep,
good times. Well, that about does it for us. Do you have any last thoughts or comments? Or
343, please fix Halo.
Yeah.
I don't want to hate it.
Yeah. We don't want to hate it. I want to play it. Well, once it's working, not right now.
Right.
But yes. Well, thanks for listening to our episode. If you made it all the way through, we really appreciate it. Remember to check out our website, Campfire Gaming Podcast, where you can, as I said, find links to our socials like Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. Be sure to hit a like, subscribe, give us a review, all that fun stuff. All that stuff helps us out. We're still a small and growing podcast, so it, you know, every little bit helps. But
two people strong and growing.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention Discord, but we're going to mention it for a third time this episode. Come join in the fun. We have a good time between recording episodes and all that good stuff and shitting on Halo more in the chat. No, we talk about other things too. A lot of other good things, from movies to games to tech. It's a good time.
Yeah.
And sports on occasion.
And sports on occasion, yeah.
Yeah. Not a lot of conversation there, but
everybody was getting all excited about the draft. Yeah.
Yeah. The Magic the Gathering draft, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Got to get those collegiate MTG players.
Yeah, right. Oh, wait till like you know, the professional, you know, MLG and stuff starts having like drafts, like when we have enough, you know.
They already e-sports. Tried it.
Did they? Okay.
Yeah. They had the collegiate combine or something like that. I think they were trying to do something like that with like League of Legends too, and the owl. I think they do it with the owl too.
Oh, interesting. I can't believe I didn't hear about that. I thought I had a great original idea, but I didn't.
No, it's stuff like that, but not like it. Nothing like the NFL draft. There's recruitment out of colleges that do esports, but yeah, not as extravagant as the NFL draft.
Yeah. Oh, that would be interesting to watch. But anyways, well, thanks for joining me, Rich. And
thank you for hosting, Matt.
Yeah, it's a good time. And thank you, dear listener. It was a pleasure having you. And until next time, we'll see you around the campfire.